it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hey, what's going on, everybody? This is the Talking Tactics Podcast. My name is Daniel.
I'm not blonde, but I'm half hope.
Were you ever tempted, like the blonde hair, like the Cisco era?
And I'll be real with you. Okocha always used to change his hair. Mm-hmm. I think one time he had his hair red, and I thought about it and I remembered who my parents were. And I valued my life. So I say, you know what? I think my life is worth more than dyeing my hair white or blonde.
You know when
so.
Mbappe and Neymar went to PSG at the same time? And then we started seeing Mbappe dyeing his hair different colors.
Yeah.
And I always felt it was like the Neymar influence. So he had the pink hair, blue hair, white, like bleached yellow or whatever it is. And I always looked at that and I thought, man, when I had hair, I wish I did more with it. Like, I wish I would have grown, like, I would have got braids or locks or just dyed it a different color.
Yeah, my parents would not have allowed it, me, though. That's the thing. My parents
would,
like,
not even locks or braids?
No, because like no, they think that you're a criminal or something. No. I mean, while at school, no, man, don't get cute with your hair, bro.
What about a fro? Could you get a fro? Like,
could get a fro, And like, I could have gotten a fro, but I just didn't want to because I didn't want to get into the whole stereotype. Because remember, afro, man. Oh, no, don't go back to the guy, because I was high and all that crap. Yeah, I didn't want to be into that old.
Wow.
Yeah,
bad era for the afro, I guess. I remember, like, white people loved Afro Man. I remember, like, them rapping it on the bus once when I was, this is like 2004, 5-ish, around there. Yeah, interesting time. But anyway, I look at Mbappe, basically, and I'm like, because I can see his hairline kind of going. And I'm like, I know what it was like to have the hairline and just to have my hair grow. It doesn't do it anymore. I wish I just did more with it, like whether it was colors or hairstyles or what. I can't even remember getting a fade because that cost extra money at the barbershop. And my dad was like, cut my hair low. Like the barber would cut it low and my dad would be like, lower. Because he wasn't trying to spend money. Anyway, this all has a point. So Talking Tactics Podcast, follow us wherever you follow us. I have a talking with Dr. Jared Ball from Black Power Media. That should be coming out Thursday. And we'll see if we can do some more over the course of the summer. So the reason we were talking about hair is Mason Mount released a video saying he didn't want to be at Chelsea anymore. He had blonde hair in the video, but he doesn't have blonde hair now, which means this was a pre-recorded video, although it was released as if he recorded it like 2 minutes before and it was off the top of his head, which it wasn't because he was reading on from something. I don't know, computer screen, iPad.
And also it's very key to add to this, which I didn't stun because again, like I've never dyed my hair. They say it takes 4 to 8 weeks to get rid of dyed hair, which I didn't know. So now that's something I need to now fully verify, but I was speaking to someone about it and they said that to get out a dyed hair takes from 4 to 8 weeks. So if that's true, it makes things very interesting. If that is true.
That's good to know. I didn't think of that. But if that's true, then he recorded this a month ago. Mm. At least. Damn. But we knew a month ago.
But but there were still negotiations. So if it's okay, if you did this like 4 weeks ago.
He doesn't say where he's going. He just says, it's time for me to leave Chelsea. So he left it at least open to where it's like, it's my time to go to United.
But why record it then, though? That's my thing. Why record it then? Like, because this is my thing. If it's heartfelt and so forth, what does heartfelt mean? Off the dome. Heartfelt means off the dome. You freestyle. Because if it's from the heart,
Freestyles change, though. HH, freestyles don't mean the same thing.
Like, I know.
People go to Funk Flex with their blackberries and whatnot. Like, it doesn't mean the same thing. So
that's bars, man. That you know nothing about that. Obviously, I can't say the full thing, but that's bars. You know nothing about that.
He's funny.
He's funny.
I don't know how relevant Funk Flex is in 2023, but those are funny. But yeah, like, people don't freestyle anymore. Like, really, like how KRS-One might freestyle or how.
But that's rap, might though. Freestyle. No. Okay, no. But pertaining to this though, if your heart felt on anything, grab your phone, put the camera, and just talk from the heart. Because what we're gonna get to in the discussion is, did Mount really love Chelsea as much as you think that he did? That's what we're really going to get into and really dissect. Because that was clearly pre-recorded. So what I'm trying to wrap my head around is, why pre-record it? Why not just do it off the dome once the deal is done to wherever you're going? So that's what is like a mystery to me is, why pre-record it while you're still in negotiations? I'm confused.
Okay. If I were Mason Mount and I were a professional footballer making a bunch of money, trying to become a brand in and of myself, maybe it would make sense for me to write down a statement to make sure I hit all the names I need to say thank you to all the people I need to say thank you to. And in doing so, I write that down. And I try to make it seem as if it was like off the top, which he did all right, but you could tell he was referencing. And I just read a statement. So for me, I can kind of understand where he's coming from. And I don't need his message personally to be read off. I don't need it to be off the top of his head. I don't care. Like, if you're leaving, you're leaving. Send a message. It's better than sending, a tweet that says, you know, thanks for all the memories. And hopefully next time I see you at Stamford Bridge, we can all have a laugh or whatever people say. So the statement is fine. For me, it's the interesting aspect, especially once you bring up the hair thing, which I didn't even think about, is the timing of it. So all of these reports that we've seen in the last month or two that are like, Chelsea are still trying to negotiate with Mason Mount. Maybe there's a chance that he might come back, or talks have broken down, or whatever it may be. They were never, if you make that video, you are not going back to Chelsea. You're waiting on the time to release that video, unless he was just going to have it in his drafts and actually come back. But I very much doubt that. So that's the interesting part. Is there was never a chance for Chelsea to correct whatever they did to mess up the contract negotiations. If they didn't mess it up and it was just the idea that was in his head, why do you want to leave? What is the basis for you leaving? So in his view, he said he felt it was the right time to leave Chelsea. What in his mind made it the right time to leave? Was it the new manager, he doesn't like me? Was it relationship with the fans? Was it the lightning rod that he's become? The litmus test of if you're a true Chelsea fan, if you're not a true Chelsea fan, just the weight of it is too much. Is it not having people like, is it not having Lampard in the club anymore that, you know, you don't feel like going through life without Frank or whatever it might be? I don't know. But what is it? Because it's not a lack of opportunity or chances or playing time, because he's been given that in spades. So what? Why now? Is it just purely money? Are Manchester United willing to offer you more money than Chelsea? Maybe that's the case. Is it Chelsea? Does he feel that Chelsea are a sinking ship? And this is now a good opportunity to go to Manchester United based on the season Chelsea just had. I don't want to stay at this club and not play Champions League football or being at Chelsea is bad for my career just on a professional level outside of money and whatever. Is it just whatever, a 23, 24-year-old, I just need to get out of here and just experience something new? I don't know. But that's the interesting part. Why? Because you were handed the keys to the kingdom. All you had to do is just take them. Whether you were rightfully given the keys to the kingdom is its own conversation. But they were yours to keep if you wanted them. So why are you going?
Money.
So you think it's money?
Yeah. And this is the crux of the matter. Club football is a mercenarial field, and people need to wise up and accept this truth, because there are certain fans who are enforcing a romanticized view of club football. I make that distinction, club football. I think we said it on the previous pod. I don't know whether it's one international or three, whatever it is. At a certain point, you are stuck with that international team for the rest of your career. You can't change. And that's it. Club football, by its nature, you're a mercenary. You're a mech. You're a mech. You can work for a company for a period of time. If you don't like either pay packets, the nature of the company you're with, your employees, your boss, the guy just above you, you can be like, okay, I want to now go to a different company because I prefer the pay, I prefer the employees, I prefer the environment. And that's simply what it is. The Totti, Maldini, Gerrard, the Lamb, those are, that is less than 1%. 99.99% of club players move clubs. 99.99%. For Mason Mount, it's not complicated. It was very simple. He felt that whatever what Chelsea were offering him wasn't, did not meet his value. And he felt that based on my position at the club, the banner, I should be able to have a greater say upon the terms of the contract in terms of contract length and pay packet. And Chelsea just were not going to give in to that. So he looked at alternatives. Okay, Manchester United, based on what they offer in terms of length and pay packet, is suitable to me. He said it in the video. I did what was best for my career.
I agree with him.
Daniel.
I think the move to United is what's best for his career, but we can get to that in a second.
Well, no. But see, and that's the whole thing here.
But just half hope, just quickly, if I can nail down something that you said.
Mm.
You said length of contract you think was important. I guess that's what I'm garnering from here. It's one of the pieces of the puzzle. Chelsea, from by all accounts, offered him 6 or 7 years, which for me, I'm like, you haven't committed a crime. You don't need to sign an indentured servitude contract. So I'm with him on that one. But he signed a 5+1 with United. That's 6.
So what's the pay packets really though?
In the narrow aspect of years, how much money comes attached with those years is its own thing. Mm. But people were like, he just doesn't want to sign for 9 years or Heck 7 years or 6 years. Well, he's signing a 5+1, and I think the plus one is a club option, not a player option, although it might be a player option. But from, I don't know what to believe on Chelsea Twitter, if I'm honest with you, because people have gone nuts over this, which is kind of symbolic of what I was saying. Like, bro had the keys to the kingdom. Like, he's broken hearts with this one.
Yeah.
But just in terms of years, and it was meant to be quicker than this. But just in terms of years, the difference isn't that vast between the United offer and Chelsea. So it doesn't have anything to do with length of contract. Otherwise, you don't sign 5+1. You would have signed for a 4+1 or a 3+1. He didn't. He signed for effectively 6 years. So it's not about length of contract. It's like it's the money or it's some professional ambition of, I like, maybe he was just always a Manchester United fan. Did anybody think of that?
Daniel, now we're getting to the meat. He wasn't birthed in the center circle of Stamford Bridge.
Okay, which is the point we had from the fucking beginning.
Let's get to the core of this whole discussion right now. Y'all created this. Y'all created this.
Is that your version of y'all, by the way? You all?
Yeah, y'all. Yeah, that's my thing, y'all. Y'all. I say, y'all created this, man. Y'all created this. You created this. Because you said he is Chelsea's pride and joy. You said he's the face of Chelsea. You said he's the future captain. You said he's a Chelsea legend. You already wrote the story before he wrote the first word on chapter one. When you've already filled in chapter one, chapter two, chapter three, act one, act two, act three, the end, book published, get it on shelves next week. You guys already wrote his book and I was like, wait a minute, I'm still writing, and spoiler alert, chapter four, I'm going to Man United. So I don't know what version you're writing. In the version of my book, in chapter four, I'm going to Man United. But in your version, end the final chapter, the epilogue, statue is built. One of Chelsea's finest ever players. Cobham's finest. But you wrote the story before it was even properly written in the real world. So, as you said, how much did he really love Chelsea? You just bullied us into saying that he loves Chelsea. Chelsea is part of him, where he probably was just an employee. Okay, yes, I was at the academy. Yes, I've been here since eight. So? Here's the thing. The moment they cut off the umbilical cord, they put a Chelsea jersey upon me while there was still blood on my skin. Cool. But my thing, though, is when you grow older, you mature. You think, Daniel, are you the same person you were when you were 6 years old?
No.
Are you the same person you were when you were 11 years old?
No.
Are you the same person you were when you were 19 years old?
No.
You change. We change. So at a point, that 8-year-old from the academy wasn't the same person that he was when he was 8 years old at the academy. And as he's growing older, he's maturing. Mm-hmm. He's now looking at life. He's now looking at his career. He's now an older, wiser person. As he said in the video, this was what was best for me. So here's the key thing. You shouldn't be angry at him. Anybody that's angry at him, there's something wrong with you. Because then we now have to ask questions. Why are you angry at him? Because let's be real. We both agree.
They bought the book. And but they already had the ending for the book.
But that's not Mount's fault.
And just quickly, because I'm staring at a book now. It's called The Wretched of the Earth. It's written by Franz Fanon. And the foreword is written by, I think it's written by Jean-Paul Sartre, who is like one of the French intellectuals. And I remember when I first got the book, I wanted just to read Fanon. I didn't want to read Sartre, so I skipped the foreword. But the foreword is actually quite important because it centers what the actual book is in the historical context of it. So I went back and I read the foreword. And I was like, yeah, that was just pretty important. The foreword of Mount's book was written by Frank Lampard. Hmm. And it's very hard to encapsulate all of these things and why Chelsea fans feel like they do, why they bought the book, and why they believe the ending without understanding who wrote the foreword of the book. And the person who wrote the foreword of the book for many Chelsea fans is the greatest Chelsea player of all time. Not on this podcast. That would be DJ Drogba.
No, see, that would be Drogba.
Perhaps even Zola. Yeah, I would say he who shall not be named is probably better than Frank Lampard. He wore the same number as Koulibaly.
Also, yeah, there we go.
But when Frank Lampard writes your foreword, and the book narrative is he started when he was 7 years old. He kicked the valve with a bull. Like, they did all of that little stuff just to pull on the heartstrings of Chelsea fans. Frank Lampard effectively anoints him as my heir apparent, your future king.
Mm.
Then we get to the end of the book, and it's like, yeah, he has the statue. He has his 700 appearances. He's won however many honors or whatever it is, Chelsea Player of the Years. And then, as you say, the real book is in chapter 3, for the betterment of my career, I got a dip.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa. Lampard told us something different. He promised us something different. And I feel like that's a big part of what this is. You can't tell Mount's story at Chelsea without the auspice, the aura, the specter of Francis. No. You can't do it.
You can't.
I'm done.
No. I mean, look, should Lampard be blamed, or should people blame themselves?
I think Lampard set the context, or he set the table. We'll put it that way. Like, he set the table for people to be pissed. But I can set the table. Like, you can take a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
Yes.
So at the end of the day, you are the horse that drank. But Lampard did lead you to the brook.
But again, you still have a choice as to whether you want to now go ahead and eat from the table. Yes, right. I set the table. I didn't put a gun to your head to say that it's from this table. I've set it. Now it's your choice. And you willing? Because here's the real. Lampard set that table. And I was like, Lampard, thanks. But I'm going down the store there to eat my panadiam and the egusi soup. So, like, this is good. And I'm sure the food you're cooking is good. But I prefer that Eba and that Gary. Sorry. So, you willingly from the table that Lampard set. And my thing, though, is it goes back to this whole thing, and I think this may be like a wider discussion.
Mm.
Why do fans invest so much and romanticize certain players when you know what club football is about? Gerard, Totti, Maldini are the exception to the exception to the exception to the rule.
It was the preface, by the way, not the forward. But
so
same
preface.
Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, those guys are the exception. So it is very rare for the Maldini story, the Totti story, and the Lam story to come to fruition.
Mm.
And this is something that over happens in life. People were too desperate for Mason Mount to be the Chelsea legend. You are forcing it too much. Again, I told you, like, I go to Fulham Broadway, Mount is plastered all over. I go into Chelsea megastore, Mount's jersey is right beyond there. Because see, my thing now is, see, what happens now? Do we now go to the right face, which is Rhys James, or do we now say, yo, Connor, what up?
Ben. Chili.
Oh, Chili?
Let's go Chili.
So basically, Rhys James just can't be the face.
It'll be Enzo.
No, come on. It's gonna be someone English.
Does it?
That's the whole point. No, come on. The whole point of proper Chelsea is proper Chelsea. That's what proper Chelsea is. Proper Chelsea has to be English, preferably from the academy.
It'll have to be Rhys James.
It has to be.
And if it isn't, then, oh boy, got a discussion.
If it isn't, then we have a dissertation
that,
to break
that. That it isn't already is already a discussion.
It's but already a discussion.
But if it isn't now, then okay. Then, yeah. Then it just is.
See, no. See, no, but no. My the main thing here is Mason Mount did nothing wrong.
Mm-mm.
Chelsea fans being angry at him, I'm like, no. Blame yourselves and be angry at yourselves. Because what are you angry at him for? It's club football. He made a choice. And he made it a life choice and he made a career choice. Chelsea offered him something. He didn't want it. United offered him something, so he went to United. He is not bound by duty to be at Chelsea forever and accept whatever Chelsea give him because he's an academy player. That's stupid. You're being stupid. But for again, what I always say, kids, two types of fans. The football fan and the tribal fan. The football fan, he gets the reality. Yeah. Yes, I support my team. Yes, I love my team. But I get it. They're mercenaries. Fans, some will stay, some will go. And when they go, life moves on. Life moves on. The tribal fan, yeah, I know some come and go. Certain players can't leave. And if they leave, I'm going to have an issue. I'm sorry. As crazy as it was, let's break this down. Okay, let's actually break this down. Figo, Sol Campbell. From the outset, we have to keep the same energy. You're free to go wherever you want to go. But see, this is a very difficult conversation. Because I'm trying to, I have to maybe divorce half hope from footballing culture.
Okay.
Footballing culture, you can't go to a rival. You can't go from Arsenal to Tottenham, Tottenham to Arsenal. You can't go from Boca Juniors to River Plate, River Plate to Boca Juniors. You can't go from Rangers to Celtic, Celtic to Rangers. You can't go from Barca to Real, Real to Barca. You just can't. Because there are rivals and there are rivals. Boca, River Plate, Rangers, Celtic, Barcelona, Real Madrid. Those are rivals. But at the same time, I am free to do whatever the hell I want. Is there a rule that says that I shouldn't go to a rival? No. Now, you may not like it, it may rub fans the wrong way based on how intense fans are. But now this is half up talking.
There are gentlemen's agreements. Like, I do feel like after Figo, Barca and Madrid were like, okay, guys, like, we can't do this again.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Look, a pig's head? Really? Come on.
A whole pig's head.
A full pig's head. That's crazy.
No,
that's
but
crazy.
You were saying as half hope.
As half hope, rivalries are not. I don't buy into rivalries as much as other fans do. I don't see Tottenham as Chelsea's rival, or Arsenal as Chelsea's rival. There are teams I just don't like. Like, I hated United before I liked Chelsea. So that was just, I've always hated Man United. That's just to do with sibling rivalry, you know. So the notion of a player joining a air quotes rival, I'm like, it's a player's freaking choice. My thing though is, look, you have to read the room. Life is what it is. It isn't what you think it should be. It is what it is. We don't live in a utopia. We don't live in an ideal. We live in reality. We live in the real. Fans are fans. And fans are emotional. And fans are very attached. So for Mason Mount, completely well within your rights. But when the repercussions come, and they will come, you have to accept it. Because you have to know exactly what... Because, Mount, you have to look at the whole 360. Know who you are, what you represent. This is social media. You know your status at the club. And you went to Manchester United. You have to know what the fallout is going to be. And that's a video. I don't think that's a video of a guy who's realized what he's actually done. Like, that's not a video of a guy who, do you actually know what you've actually done? Again, keep in mind, guys, I don't give a damn. I think he's well within his rights. But put me out of it. Let's now read the room. If you read the romance, do you know what you've done? Like, this is a big deal. If we're reading the room and we're now with football culture, you moved to Manchester United and you are who you are and you know your status at the club and you know what you mean to a certain section of Chelsea fans where there are guys who their love for you doesn't even make sense. like the love that people have for you doesn't make sense. Like it's inexplicable. So, and for me, it's like, didn't you realize that? So that is why this is such an interesting move, because we can have such a long conversation about the nature of fanship. Mm-hmm. So we can even talk about human nature, and we can really get psychological and people's attachments towards things. Because again,
Last thing,
I think you have to understand that for some people, it's more than football. Like we've discussed this before, it's not really about football for some of these fans. This is my family. Mm. This is an extension of my family. Mount ain't a player. He's like a brother. He's a family member. See, for you and me, yeah, Mount is a player that plays for Chelsea. Okay. For some of the guys, no. He's a family member. So for a family member leaving the family to go to a rival was deeply painful. And it's something that will truly anger you. And you're like, what? Just like when Sol Campbell moved from Tottenham to Arsenal. Or when Figo, like, do you know what Figo meant to Barcelona? He won the Ballon d'Or at Barcelona, I believe, if I'm right. I think he did. So for many Barca fans, that was very painful to see Figo go from Barca to Real Madrid. First of all, for him to even leave at the height of his career and to go to Real Madrid, oh my God.
Pig's head.
Yeah.
If Mount would have gone, let's say he goes to Bayern Munich first. So let's say Bayern Munich come with 60 million. And then he goes, he plays there for 2-3 years, and then he goes to United. There isn't the same level of hate on the Chelsea side, because in a lot of Chelsea fans' minds, United is a direct rival, especially Chelsea fans from a particular era who remember, you know, 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009. Like, United are like one of those hated. Like, I don't like those teams, and from my experience and talking with people from London in particular, there are a lot of London United fans. So there's just better to go around, even though it doesn't quite make sense. Like, I get it. So there is something going directly from one team to the next that just hits a little bit harder. And I think about this primarily, but just for example, in the context of Kevin De Bruyne. Like, if Kevin De Bruyne would have gone straight from Chelsea to City, probably stings a little bit more than him going to, I think, Wolfsburg, then to City. It's still like, yeah, we should have kept him, from a lot of Chelsea fans. Like, yeah, we should have kept him. But you didn't sell him directly to a rival. Like, he went somewhere else. So I feel like that's part of it, you know. And it goes to the tribalism thing that you speak of, like, you know, especially in England. You can't, when you say family, I hear tribe. I think that's a more apt word. Like you don't leave this tribe for that one directly. If you get there somehow in the course of your career and it takes a twist and turn to get you there, cool. Maybe Chelsea wouldn't want to bring you back or something like that. It's like Fabregas. Like, I'm sure Arsenal fans were a bit pissed that he went to Chelsea, but he didn't go directly from Arsenal to Chelsea. There was a stop in the middle. But he went to Barcelona. Arsenal had first refusal. Then he goes to Chelsea and wins his trophies that he didn't win in Arsenal. Slight jab. But he went to a place first. So it doesn't hit as hard as the Figo going directly, or Campbell going directly, or whoever it is just going straight. So that's one thing. From Mount himself, like on a personal level, I think it's the right move. Not just United, it's just getting out of Chelsea for him is the best thing. So when he says it's the right time to make a move in my career, I feel like this is what's right for me. He's right. You do need to leave. You need to find a club where you aren't seen as some, like, a piece of furniture. Like, you're not a part of just, what's the word I used? I think I said an immovable teacher's pet who got opportunities in the team because you had relationships with Lampard, not nepotism in that way. They're not family, but like people are always going to look at you suspiciously and treat you suspiciously, especially on social media, because you got to a place without, or I don't know, there's just something about him that it doesn't feel as if where he got to where he got naturally. It feels like he was short-tracked to get to where he got because Lampard liked him so much. And because of that, maybe he felt a way that maybe people don't really appreciate who I am or what I do, so I have to leave. You know, a prophet isn't accepted in his own, in his hometown kind of vibe. So I think going to United, that immediately is gone. He doesn't have to worry about people thinking I'm just here because I'm an academy product. I'm just here because Frank Lampard wanted me. I got a team to spend 55 plus five or 50 plus five on me. They're giving me however much money in a week. They actually believe in me based on what I can do on the pitch. They're not buying me because my name is Mount and I was born in a manger in Stamford Bridge. Like, they're not, no, they're buying me because of what I can do as a midfielder. And for me, I look at that and I think, Mason, sink or swim. If you really are the midfielder that a lot of these Chelsea fans think you are and England fans think you are, and to an extent, if you're the person that I think you are or can be, then swim. And United will be a place that you can do that. But if it just so happens that you aren't who you think you are, you are who Chelsea fans think you are, and you might not be who I think you are, then you'll sink. But you need to find out outside of Chelsea, and he was never going to find out for real, because you could never, he could never sink at Chelsea, because the fans were like those floaty things that you put on kids' arms when they're in the pool, like those Johnny Minerals and all those types of fans, like the Rory Jennings of the world. Like, those are the things that, like, he'll never sink. You'll never find out how good you are. And when I see that you're being held afloat, that created so much turmoil and toxicity that you guys aren't being real. If he plays bad, you should be able to say he's playing bad. But no, we can't say anything bad. We got to support the players because reasons. At Manchester United, you might not get that. Harry Maguire, David De Gea. nobody's going to keep you afloat. I think he needs to know that for himself. And that's why I think it's the right move, whether or not he's contextualized it that way. If he's just thinking about money and I'm thinking about his career in a more different way than him, that's fine. But ultimately, it's what's best for him.
No. I think that's an interesting take. And I just don't know. We don't know Mount. So we don't know what his
motivations. Yeah.
Again, like, it could have been money. It could have been what you said of like, oh, let me now actually prove myself now, because at Chelsea, I'll always be protected. At Man United, I've not met a single United fan who has been happy with the move. So already you're on the back foot.
Got to prove them wrong.
Yeah, so already, because several United fans are like, why are we getting Mount? Who is this guy? 55 mil? He's overrated. Why are we getting him? So already now you really now have to bet on yourself, because there are guys who... there are United fans who expect you to fail. Yeah. So from like that point of view, I'm like, okay, now you're in a whole different scenario now where prove that you're worth 55 mil, prove us wrong. And you see, if we're now trying to get into the transfer in and of itself, as I always say, Mount is useful. I've never called Mount a garbage player. He was just overrated. And I think he was grossly overrated by people at Chelsea. But Conor Gallagher is a garbage player. The guy's garbage. Mount, there's quality there. It's just that if Mount is your best player, something is wrong. Mount can be the best player in the team, but he should be one of the key players that helps you in the team. He's a great supplementary piece. Great supplementary piece. But he can't be the heart and soul of a team, no. If it's in the heart and soul of your team, something is wrong. So, because I think what the guys are saying that, like, I think for United fans, they're like, wait, Ten Hag, I thought that you just had to acquiesce to the pieces you had because you couldn't get Frankie de Jong. And you just had to acquiesce to a style of play that's yielded results, and most importantly, top four. But now that you now have a summer, now you can now try and get your Frankie de Jong-esque kind of player and now try and play with the kind of your philosophy. But what some guys have said is that maybe Ten Hag has looked at the past season and said to himself, okay, wait a minute. Why do I have to be married into this kind of philosophy I have? Maybe I can somehow get some joy through a Mount, Casemiro, Bruno midfield. On paper, that looks like the Exorcist, that midfield three. But
I don't know. Have your attacking mid, you have your DM, and your Mount is box to box.
No. From a footballing point of view, it says something. From an aesthetic point of view, it's the Exorcist. From an aesthetic footballing point of view, because it's literally hot potato. That's midfield three. It's hot potato. But from an effective point of view, it could be effective.
It might work.
It could be like football is all about effectiveness. There are several ways to cook a meal. Some people like seasoning. Some people don't like seasoning. Some people go for the oven. Some people like the soft fry.
Sorry, I can't even speak. Who doesn't like seasoning?
Let's not name any names or any cultures.
Let's not name names.
No names, no countries, no cultures, no continents.
And no empires. Everybody likes seasoning. Salt and pepper, at least.
I'm just saying. I know some people that don't really mess with seasoning.
But there are different ways to cook.
There are different ways to cook. And you could have a scenario where somehow, some way, it's Ten Hag, Bruno, Casemiro midfield wins games. Somehow it's wins games. So look, okay, let me throw the question to you. We don't know, but again, we're here for a pod, and the whole fun is trying to contemplate and think ahead.
A good speculation.
Yeah, speculation. Mount at United. So success, failure, pretty good, so, hard to say.
Pretty good is what I'm leaning on right now. The only other kind of reference point we have for a move like this is Juan Mata, of beloved Chelsea player who goes to Manchester United for a pretty decent fee. But if you look at how Mata's career kind of panned out, it didn't go great because he went to a manager that didn't want him. He went from a manager that didn't want him at Chelsea and sold him to United, and then Mourinho somehow came back around to United. He terrorized Mata. I'm not saying Mata and Mount are anywhere near each other in terms of technical ability and playing midfield. Like, Mata's light years better.
Oh yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I can kind of see it going that way, where Mount kind of just sticks around Manchester United for 6, 7, 8 seasons. He's okay. He's never, you know, their best player, but he's a functioning piece in the team. He's basically what he should have been at Chelsea, minus the hype, which is an incredibly valuable squad player who can play in several different roles in your midfield or in your attacking three. He could be a false nine, I think, in some weird world. He could be a number 10. He could play wide left. I'm sure you could put him at... I don't know why he wasn't ever tried at wing back. So you could even put him back there if you wanted to, because he just runs. Conor Gallagher the same. He could play as an 8. Maybe you could get away with him as a 6 in a double pivot. I would never try him as a single. But yeah, there are different tactical things that you could do with Mount. And I can see him not being great at any of them, but just being good enough to plug holes where you need them. And if you have the functioning team around him, let's say you get a good season from Casemiro, let's say you get a good season from Bruno, and you just need supplementary midfield pieces, and Mount to show up with his 10 goals a season and his 10 assists, if he can get that in all comps, you'll be satisfied. Is he going to dribble players? Is he going to be the most? Is he going to win Man of the Match awards and be the sexiest player on the team in terms of what he does?
Wait, hold on.
No, that static, is that from you?
Yeah. I static. Was that me or you?
I don't know.
Oh,
like I'm here. I heard the static. I thought it was you, but I was
I thought it was you. So maybe it was me. I don't know. Okay,
maybe it was just a streamer. I don't know.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's never gonna be just like some 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10 player, or even 8. But he's always just been a solid 6 or 7.
Yeah.
But Chelsea fans with the blue tinted glasses, yo, he's the best player in the Champions League final. He was the most valuable player. Like his assist, it's just the narrative that was spun about him turned him into something that he really had no right to be. So I feel like at United he'll have the tabula rasa, as they say, like a blank slate.
Yeah.
And from there, and this is beautiful too. You have haters now, like legit haters. He always had haters, but now you have real haters. You have Chelsea haters who are like, we hate you, we want you to do bad. And you have Manchester United doubters. As you say, you have someone, you have something to prove, you have people to prove wrong.
Yeah.
And that should, I think, inspire him on a next level. And it could be, I think it will be good for him. Because I feel like he has the mentality to carry it. He just has to do it.
Yeah, no. I mean, literally
40 minutes talking about Mason Mount, by the way. even a bit longer.
No, here's the thing. He doesn't warrant that length of time, but the topic that is beyond him is a large topic.
Oh, the fan culture.
Yeah, the fan. It's not really about Mason. Look, as a player, who is the guy's just some. Who cares who he is? But. The term of people's love towards Mount, what he meant to a club, the amount of Mount sexuals that he birthed, and the fact of he now made this move to United, it's super fast. Because, trust me, I've only seen a tidbit of the fallout on Twitter. Because Lord only knows the Twitter spaces that are happening right now. I've only
seen retweets, man. I haven't clicked any of those... you know, Mount traitor, Mount snake, Mount rat, Mount all of, like, no, I'm not doing that.
Oh, but okay, traitor. You see,
traitor from what?
Like
from Trader Joe's? Like what? No, but
okay, but I think what? Okay, why do fans do this? Why?
Because it's love.
Doesn't love, your family love you?
Love and hate are very similar. Like you have to love somebody.
Doesn't your family love you? Okay, if you don't have a family, fine. Isn't the love from your family enough?
No, I don't know. I just think people were really, they were super attached to him in a way that not you. You know, like anybody else but you, because we were told something different about you. So for you to leave in that way, where people think you decided way before Chelsea even had a chance to recover it, especially based on the hair and all this type of stuff, like... I just think that it just leaves a sour taste in people's mouths. And then they express that. And then we're dealing with anonymous Twitter faces who don't show themselves on, like, to be slightly honest, I might be talking to a person like that, that nobody knows their real name and they wear shades and all of that. But either way, like there's a level of just spite and just animosity on social media that is probably not reflective of the everyday real life person. But, you know, put it this way. You don't take Twitter spaces as real life.
No.
If we did, Lord Jesus. Now, this is the other interesting part here. I'm seeing people gas Reece James as this is true Cabo. See, like he's getting the same treatment. And I feel like they're gassing Reece James and the departure of Reece James to, I'm predicting Newcastle in like 2027.
Oh, wow.
Or Real Madrid in 2026. Like he's not going to stay at Chelsea. And if the Pochettino era goes how I think it might.
Oh, dear.
Reece James isn't playing. Like if Reece James deserves to be in the Champions League. So wherever that football is, he should be there. Like he shouldn't just be playing a domestic schedule in the prime of his career. I'm sorry. They're gassing him up just to destroy him on his way out.
Yeah.
So they're labeling him, oh, he's the king of Cobham. He's the prince. He's our true king, whatever you would say. It's just like, have you not seen the full court press that Real Madrid ran on him for like 2 years now? Vinicius sending him like emojis, and just everybody in Madrid is just like, no, he's him. What are you going to do when he leaves? Now, maybe because it's to Madrid and it's not United, as we said earlier, maybe it's a bit lighter. Like, maybe people understand.
You don't know. No, that is different, but, though. It would be different if it's Real Madrid.
But not once they anoint him as God's chosen.
No, but see, his context is very key. As you said, if the Poch era goes like how people are thinking it might go, and Chelsea are now in a state of where we don't even know when next Chelsea would even see European football, and Reece James is clearly the best player and still highly rated, what Chelsea fan will now begrudge him making the move to Real Madrid then? Maybe, yes, you've announced him and so forth, but if Chelsea are in a bad state and the club is in disarray and is aimless, and Reece James decides to go, he's still a traitor?
No, you're right. Yeah. Because what I didn't take into consideration was for James to leave in that way, it would be consistent seasons of Chelsea being bad. And in that consistency of being bad, the morale of Chelsea fans would be like, man, everybody should go, man.
Yeah.
If you're good, man, you might as well just go, man. Get out of here. I can't, but you should go. By the way, Pochettino came out with his little press conference in his... you know, Spanish, English, you know, they even had subtitles. I was like, oh, that's kind of rude. But, you know, what did you think about what he said? I saw a lot of Chelsea fan channels like, yo, this is what we wanted to hear. This sounds good. He gets it. He gets me.
It looks, it's very simple.
It's speed dating.
Oh, wow. No, look, it's simple. Are these just words?
Yeah.
Or do you have actual spots about the words? So, you see, on one hand, I'm like, that my first reaction was, yeah, you're saying on the right things, but it's very easy to be coached by the peer and say the right things for the fans that you're speaking towards. But it's another thing where you actually truly believe this and you're actually going to put this into practice. But then someone made a very good point. Joseph and I was speaking to was, does Pochettino view this as trying to prove a point? So my whole thing with Poch is that he's a loser, you know. You don't know, you failed at PSG. You ultimately failed. Okay, no, you failed at PSG. You didn't fail at Tottenham, but what you did in that UCL final, playing Kane, that was a loserish thing to do, and I lost all respect for you. So you're not coming in with that much cachet at Chelsea. But is it a case of where, oh, it's Poch the loser, or he's trying to prove a point? Oh, PSG, it was a whole LSG element that was happening there. Tottenham, that was maybe my stepping stone of just getting my feet wet with this whole EPL management thing. Chelsea, based on the history of what it's about, I'm here to prove my point. So I'm in two minds. On one hand, is the nightmare scenario, which is loads of young players bought on jail term, blood-packed contracts, and Poch, who is known as developing young players, you're just there just to develop young players, will not be sold as a premium. So again, it's a Ponzi scheme that he's going to be a part of. So it's either that or, oh, I really want to prove a point here, and I have the resources, the talents, which I didn't have at Tottenham, to really show why I am a top manager and coach, and I will now succeed where I couldn't, based on how I was held back at Tottenham and the environment that surrounds PSG.
Do you think he lasts two seasons? Like, do you think we're in the summer of 2025 and he's still Chelsea manager?
That's impossible to answer, man. I literally, Daniel, we're talking about Chelsea Football Club. I have no idea.
This is the point. And I'm glad you answered the question like that, because that's kind of where I was going. Everything you say at the beginning means nothing. Graham Potter, people are like, oh, I think he gets it. Frank Lampard's back. He gets it. Who was it before?
Salter.
There was for Lampard, Conte, Sarri. everybody's first conference, especially wearing the suit or the new, if they're in a suit or the new training ground kit, everything is convincing and it looks good. And, you know, the, everything is shot in 4K now with red cameras. You believe everything. They say the right things all the time. But it's Chelsea Football Club. Giving trust to Chelsea Football Club, have you not learned by now? Like, maybe if you started becoming a Chelsea fan like 3 years ago, okay, welcome. Nothing is what it seems. If you've been here for 3 decades, 4 decades, 2 decades, 10, one, you should know by now. They come and they say the right things all the time. We're going to fight for the badge. We're going to try to create a good team. We want everybody from the playing staff to the training staff to the people that work in Cobham to feel like a family. He's already lying. He said Chelsea are the most, are the greatest team in England of the past 10, 12, 15 years. I'm like, you know, Manchester City have won 7 Premier Leagues, however many League Cups, however many FA Cups. People are trying to say, well, it's not just England. You have to consider Europe. I'm like, okay, let's consider Europe. Chelsea have won 2 Champions Leagues, 2 Europa Leagues. Cool. City have a Champions League now. I don't know how much value we're placing on Europa Leagues these days. So those are what they are, but they're Sevilla Cups. So Chelsea have 2 Sevilla Cups. And okay, so City have 1 less Champions League. But then if you look at the domestic records, there's no way you could say that with a straight face. But of course you can say it with a straight face because it's your first interview. You can say whatever you want. Mm. You could say we're here to win every trophy. We're here to make sure Arsenal get relegated. We're here to, you can say all the things you want. He could have come out and said, I hate Spurs. Oh, that was the one thing he didn't do. Oh, he could have, if he would have went into Spurs. Oh, that would, Chelsea fans would have been so happy.
But wasn't this a sly subliminal that he sent at Tottenham? By saying that I'm finally at a club that sort of has slightly ambition and the fans
slightly
and everything.
Slightly.
It was a slight this, one, this, yeah.
Just a little, by the way, Harry Kane update. I don't think anything's happened in the week of note. So maybe Bayern will go back in. Maybe they won't.
He ain't going.
The Rice thing is official. I guess we should.
That's official.
Is it? It's definitely official.
Yeah, it's official.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. You know, congratulations to Arsenal getting a guy. When we were talking about United, I'm just giving these one sentences. Onana apparently is a thing. I'm sad about that because Chelsea say they're trying to find a backup for Kepa.
Well, what do we buy a backup? You mean a replacement, man?
No. They're trying to find a suitable B, like a number 2. To Kepa's number 1. Cause they let their, see, Mendy was too good to be your number 2. So we let him go and then we find somebody who can just be a backup to Kepa. That's not too much of a challenge. I think that's what's gonna happen. I don't know how this guy keeps getting chances. It's kinda, yeah. Just deep exhale. Is there anything else? Liverpool signed somebody. Who did they sign today?
Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai. I can't pronounce the name. Homie from Hungary. Szoboszlai. Say again, slow.
Szoboszlai.
Szoboszlai?
Yeah.
That just sounds like a mess. But yeah, I mean, let me not language shame because English sounds like a mess too.
Yeah.
Szoboszlai. Yeah, he's from Hungary, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, good player. He's good. Good player, man. Wait, and also, we saw Roque joins in 2024, Barcelona.
I saw that. I guess that's it.
Yeah, man.
Transfers. Shout out to Mason Mount, though, man. Big up for the content. I guess
you know. Thanks for the content, man. Yeah.
Are people tuning into the Mount live streams?
We had a whole breakdown today, and I'm sure we'll have another breakdown tomorrow night, Wednesday night as well.
Yes, man. It's always good to have content, man. He hasn't even moved yet. It's not even official. It's official. So
Basically, Wednesday is when things will get hot.
Are you popping bottles for when it's official?
Yeah, 100%. No. Because I think Wednesday is when he'll actually be in the jersey and actually now talk as a United player. Ooh. That's when it's now all be real.
Now, when they do his player interview, what is he going to say?
That's why I can't wait. I want to know. He's going to say,
I feel like Manchester United was the right time in my career. If he comes out and says, I've always admired Manchester United. It's always been in my mind.
I cannot wait for Wednesday, bro. I'm counting down the hours for Wednesday.
He cannot politically say that. There's no way. And even if he wants to, his brain will stop him saying it. It doesn't, and he comes out and says, I've always loved Manchester United.
But here's the thing. What do you say, though? Because remember, you have to ingratiate yourself to a new set of fans. You say, hey, thanks for being here, but no, you guys actually suck. I'm just here because, I don't know, you know, but really United, screw you guys. I mean, you have to say something that will get United fans. Remember what I just said. The United fans were not excited about you being here.
So you've
got to get them on your side. So what are you going to say? You gotta say something. Here's the thing. You've got to put some seasoning on it. So
lemon pepper. Okay, there is one more thing. When I said keeping it off on side, and I know we both need to. Like I said, when I get tired, I ramble. So I'm.
Yeah, as I said, I'm an autopilot.
I'm aware of that. Have you seen the new proposal for onside offside?
Yes. Yes.
Quick sentence on what they're up to, if you have an idea.
So the new proposal is once your entire body is beyond the last defender, that will now constitute as offside. So way back when I was growing up, what they used to say is if you can see daylight between the last defender and the attacker, it would be offside. Obviously, they change that way. It's now your shoulder. Then the whole VAR situation where your pubic hair could be offside. And from viewing it, initially I was like, aha, finally, this makes sense. No more pubic hair being offside. But I think they need to find a middle ground. Because after listening to other people's viewpoints upon this, what's the spirit of the rule? The attacker must not have an unfair advantage. If your whole body is ahead of the last defender, that's an unfair advantage. Now, it's way easier to call that offside than what we have right now, where even VAR finds it hard with all these lines being drawn. But your whole body, sorry, that's an unfair advantage. So can they find a middle ground? I don't know. But I think a middle ground makes sense.
It gives the attacker a lot. It gives the person passing the ball a bigger margin of error. And in that bigger margin of error, so basically I can be a little bit late relative to how late I could have been last season or the season before, basically my whole career. I can be a little bit more late in seeing the pass, and the run can be a little bit more, it can be worse. And we can still be called onside here. So that should create more goals. But that's only within the context of players who have played the game within the rules that we've become accustomed to. If this becomes a rule and young players come up with basically the last part of my body is onside still, then I feel like it will calibrate itself to become more normal. But what you're going to have now are players like Kevin De Bruyne, like, you've just put the game on easy mode now, because Haaland is like, he can basically be his whole body length. One stride of Haaland is massive.
Yeah.
So my margin of error, my window to get this through ball off has now become maybe half a second or a second long. I don't know how milliseconds work, but maybe it's half a second. And to a footballer, that's probably a world of time. But if you go to like the under 12s, the under 10s, you know, people who are just getting into the game, you tell them that rule and it's not going to change the way that they view the game because they haven't played it long enough and in that way for that rule to really give them enough time to capitalize on what they would normally see. So it'll be interesting. I think they'll scrap the idea wherever they're doing it, because I think instead of just measuring the front of someone's shoulders, you'll just measure the back of their heel, and you'll still need to measure, was his heel that way? Was it like, it's not going to make it any, the measurements aren't going to be any easier, really. I don't think it'll just be different times when you're measuring. So it's, I don't know why they just can't. We've tried VAR. I don't know if it's been a success. Probably hasn't been. Take the good things, leave the bad things, but they just keep trying to reinvent for whatever reason. But hey, it is what it is, man. Technology's here to stay. We just got to wait for the robots. AI, where's ChatGPT as a ref? Anyway, Talking Texas podcast. We do this every Tuesday. You guys hear it on Wednesday, although today is Wednesday by now. So, have hope. Where can people get you?
Halfoffootballhot.com, baby.
I'm at Daniel to look. This will come out when it comes out. I'm tired. Talking Tactics podcast, sometimes funny, sometimes serious.
Always football.
Indeed. See you guys next week. Peace.
Peace.
Oh, check out the second pods, by the way.
Yeah, so it's a good pod, man. Lion King, man.
All that good stuff. You know, there you go. Check it out. You won't regret it. Peace.
Peace. Sports Social Podcast Network.